Welcome back to Uprising. I'm Sonali Kohatkar. The release of millions of users' personal data from the web service Ashley Madison has generated much controversy and moralistic judgment. Ashley Madison is a sort of online dating site geared especially toward married people looking to have extramarital affairs. The hacker group calling itself Impact Team released the data they obtained after unsuccessfully demanding that the proprietors of Ashley Madison shut down the site. But there is a dark side to the data dump, and my guest Glenn Greenwald has recently written about it. Glenn Greenwald is the author of No Place to Hide, Edward Snowden, the NSA and the U.S. Surveillance State. He's also the author of How Would a Patriot Act? And With Liberty and Justice for Some, he's a former constitutional lawyer and civil rights litigator and a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist. Since he began breaking the stories of the NSA's mass surveillance, he's taken on a role as founding editor of the new media outlet The Intercept, on which he wrote the article about Ashley Madison. He now joins me live from Rio in Brazil. Welcome to Uprising, Glenn.
Great to be with you.
Now, the reasons that the hackers have to release the data seems bizarre at the outset. They were upset that Ashley Madison was retaining user data instead of deleting it. So then they released it themselves to the public?
Right. I mean, there's a lot of bizarre aspects to it. They seem to think of the site as a scam, which it very well may be in the sense that there's evidence that a substantial number of the female profiles are actually fake to induce male users to believe that there's lots of females who are waiting for them to have sex with. They were also upset, they say, about the fact that, as you mentioned, there was a fee charged by the website to delete user data. So if you joined and then you regretted it and you decided you didn't want them to have your data, you would have to pay them $19.99. for them to delete it, and the hackers say that they weren't really deleting the data. And so the response is quite bizarre, which is to say, well, we're angry that user privacy isn't being protected, and therefore we're gonna expose every user of the site. I do wanna though add that the hackers also did have a moralistic component to their manifesto, which is essentially to say to these people, look, you've engaged in wrong behavior, sinful behavior. Yes, there may be a bad effect on your life from what we're doing, but go ahead and repent and you'll get over it and move on.
Now, you wrote about your colleague Farai Chidea, who found that her email address had been erroneously linked to a user of Ashley Madison, somebody from South Africa, a man from South Africa. Now, she's single, so she didn't have any personal damage that was done to her. She got to write an article about it. But how does an example like Farai Chidea's reveal how this data could falsely incriminate somebody?
Well, there are all sorts of ways that somebody whose name appears in the database may not have actually engaged in cheating at all. One example is that somebody's name is an email address are misused by somebody else, whether deliberately or as part of some kind of a hacking scam. So you could have, I could go onto the Ashley Madison site and register in your name if I know your email address, and then you'll appear in the data dump even though you've never used the site. Other people may use the site because they just simply have kind of a interest, a titillation that comes from talking to people who use these kinds of sites. They may use it for pornography, private pornography. They may use it with their spouse, with their spouse's knowledge, and in the sense that it's not cheating at all. There's all kinds of reasons. Some journalists have come forward and said, I actually registered on the site because I was writing an article about online promiscuity or people, how they search for sex partners. And so researchers or scholars or psychologists or journalists who join the site for all sorts of valid professional reasons also may have their name appear on the site. So the fact that somebody's name is in the database by no means means that they've committed adultery.
You know, Glenn, what's really interesting is that you seem to be one of the few folks on the progressive side of the spectrum who is also sort of speaking out about the fact that we need to pull back from taking a moralistic tone. There's this sort of glee, public glee all around, whether you're coming at it from a judgmental, you know, Christian evangelical perspective, or also from the sense of, well, these are, quote, cheating scumbags, so they just are getting what they deserve. What do you make of this tone that we're seeing?
Yeah, it is really quite bizarre. I mean, for a long time, these kinds of moralistic judgments about people's private and sexual choices who are adults were sort of the province of people like Jerry Falwell and Pat Robertson and the religious right, the people scorned as social conservatives by all good progressives. And yet, I can tell you, like, every single time there's any kind of a sex scandal involving people like Anthony Weiner, or former New York Governor Eliot Spitzer, you get these kinds of condemnations coming not from the Jerry Falwell crowd only, but from lots of progressives who think that they are able to sit in judgment of other people's private lives and their marital choices that they make and the agreements that people have with their spouses, and to not only wallow around in those and interfere in them and learn them and know them, but cast judgment on people for the choices they make in their private lives. I mean, even if somebody did have an affair using this website in a way that their spouse wasn't aware of, how is that anyone's business other than the parties to the marriage? You know, there's all kinds of complexities and complications that people have in their marriages and their sexuality and their sexual choices. Unless you know all of that and are able to gain all the intimate details of people's lives, which you shouldn't be interested in doing because it's actually none of your business, forming those kinds of judgments are just so crude and moralistic and exactly the way that the religious right has been for decades doing to people. And I find it really disturbing that it seems to be across the ideological spectrum.
I suppose the time that it becomes relevant is when you have, and you pointed this out in your article, when you have exactly those kinds of moralistic folks like politicians who espouse so-called family values and Christian values, and when they are found to be privately breaking those values or violating those values themselves, then it seems relevant as a public topic.
Right. And I mean, as you noted, I did say in the piece I wrote that that is the one case to me where it's at least arguably valid to engage in this kind of outing, because there you're essentially having somebody who is having an extremely negative impact on purpose on other people's rights or their status in society by moralizing and condemning them about who they are in a way that's extremely hypocritical. But, you know, 33 million people had their user identities exposed, and a tiny, tiny fraction of them are the Josh Duggars of the world, you know, the people where this hypocrisy argument applies. And I think, you know, and so to sort of justify this hack on the grounds that, well, Josh Duggar is a relevant person to expose, is sort of like treating these 33 million human beings, many of whom are going to have their reputations and their careers and their marriages and their relationships with their children, if not their liberty and their life. Remember, there's a lot of people from around the world in places where if you're an adulterer or exposed as being gay, you can actually be killed or in prison. You know, to treat those people as collateral damage for the few handful of good cases, I think is kind of grotesque. And then the one point I would hasten to add is, you know, I got an email from a woman over the weekend saying that she was an Ashley Madison user and that she is somebody who has actually in her scholarly work advocated for what she called traditional marriage and said that, you know, a lot of people would probably view her as a hypocrite. And yet the story she told me was that her husband for 5 years has been battling terminal cancer, and the treatments that he's been receiving has made him sexually.
It was linked to the data release, but it wouldn't be surprising if it was, of course. These sorts of revelations can pretty much destroy marriages and ruin people.
Right. And remember that because it's on the internet, it means that it's permanent. So yeah, it'll essentially follow these people around forever. It means that if they apply for a job or a family member or friends search them or people in their community and discover it, it'll stick to you forever. It's like a permanent digital scarlet letter attached to these people in a way that, as you said, can really ruin lives.
Now, what are the implications of this hacking incident on notions of privacy that the government routinely violates? You've spoken about the chilling effect that government surveillance has on people because, of course, it's very easy to tar and feather somebody if you look into what they do privately as a way to silence them politically. Should we all be afraid whether or not any of us are connected with the Ashley Madison site or not?
Totally. You know, for people out there who have some kind of weird compulsion to condemn the private sexual choices of married people, well, these are adulterers, so they get what they deserved. I mean, think about how easily this hack could be applied to a whole variety of other activities that you might be less kind of willing to endorse. Imagine, for example, if there's a database filled with people's medical records, which does exist on the internet, and we're able to learn about people's drug usage or their diseases or their alcoholism, Yeah, drug usage, absolutely. Or imagine banking records and being able to see every single charge on your credit card or every single payment that you made for whatever reason. It really compromises the ability to live our lives as we increasingly do in any sort of private way on the internet. If you start kind of endorsing the idea that this kind of data can be indiscriminately and on a mass level disclosed to the public, it essentially means that privacy has been completely destroyed from our lives in a way that all of us should find very disturbing.
I mean, I'm imagining, for example, somebody hacking into the sites of into pornography sites and exposing people who use paid pornography sites. I mean, I'm a very strong advocate on the issue of pornography, but I certainly wouldn't be in favor of exposing those who might be using pornography, because again, this is something that people do privately. One can have political discussions on pornography, but to expose millions of people and what they engage in privately, it sort of goes into the same realm of the U.S. government's justification. If you're not doing anything you shouldn't be doing, then you have nothing to worry about.
Right. And I mean, you know, the reality is that we all as human beings have things to hide. There are things that we do that we wouldn't want other people knowing about, that we're only willing to tell our physician or our psychologist or our spouse or our best friend, that we would feel ashamed and embarrassed to have other people know about, even though it's not actually anything wrong. It's just private and intimate. And we explore things about the world, making choices that we wouldn't want other people to know that we're exploring, or desires or interests that we have. This is a crucial part of what makes human life interesting and rich and creative. And if we live in a society in which we believe that all of the choices and all of the actions that we undertake can be and probably will be held up for public scrutiny and ridicule, we're going to just be as conformist and kind of boring as we can possibly be. And that ultimately, this mindset, well, if you're not doing anything wrong, you have nothing to hide, that really is the lesson that that people who say that want us to learn. Just be as boring and uninteresting as you can possibly be, make the choices that society approves of and nothing else, and you'll be fine. And that's not a very comforting bargain, that you can be spared this sort of invasion as long as you do everything that society demands of you.
Well, Glenn, what do you make of the idea that because these sorts of things are between consenting adults, they should be allowed, but then others might say, well, there are spouses who are being cheated on that are hurt, and so we must think of the victims. And there are cases, of course, if you extrapolate that to you know, the sort of activities that do harm either women who might be forced to engage in pornography or even child pornography. You can, you know, there are people who will make the case that they would not feel bad about exposing consumers of activities that do actually harm people.
Right, and I think that those are the lines that we draw all the time, right? Yeah. So there are things that you can do within a marriage that harm your partner to such an extent that we as society declare it to be our business. Like, you're no longer allowed to rape your spouse and say that it's not rape because you're married, and that's how it should be. You're not allowed to beat your wife and then claim that, well, it's occurring within the confines of your marriage, and so it's nobody else's business. So there is certain behavior that we say that even though it's private and between you and your spouse, we as a society still have an interest in condemning. Forcing someone into pornography is fundamentally different than an adult woman who decides she'll do it. And you can go and talk to women in the pornography industry who are adamant about their own autonomy and resentful of the idea that they're not capable as adult women to make choices. So these are lines that we have to draw all the time. And if you, but I think it's very important to realize that if your attitude is, any private behavior that harms someone else becomes my business, that essentially is licensed to delve into and regulate and interfere in everybody's private life. Arguments between spouses are hurtful. People who are neglectful of their spouses can be hurtful. But I don't think that that means that it becomes all of our business to be vigilantes and morality police and regulate the behavior within marriages. It has to be a very kind of concrete harm before it becomes a societal interest, lest we eliminate the private sphere altogether on that basis.
Glenn, I want to thank you so much, as always, for joining us today. We'll post a link to your article in The Intercept on our website about this. Thanks so much.
Always great to talk to you. Thank you.
My guest is Glenn Greenwald. He is a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist. His book is called No Place to Hide. And you can find out about his work at firstlook.org/The Intercept. His article about Ashley Madison is called The Puritanical Glee Over the Ashley Madison Hack. This is Uprising. We'll be right back.